Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And we are doing an experiment.
And talking about dating.
And love. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Hi, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yay, I have a water bottle.
Yeah. Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy, and this is our podcast. It was once upon a time a podcast about me, Kimmy, going on 51 first dates, but then I met a pretty cool dude. So now, Liza, what do you think this podcast is about?
Now it's a podcast about dating in general, and especially early stages of dating, I would say. Like, first dates, but like early dating.
Yeah.
And if you've been listening in the last couple of weeks, you've met our new dater, who is Kimmy's brother, who is Kenny, who we love. Who is an angel, gem, baby, doll.
He'll be back on next week to recap his date 3.
He will.
We'll be announcing our new dater soon. Ooh, all these things.
Yeah. New dater, tease.
So if you're just joining us, thank you so much. I hope you found it in a cool way from a cool friend of yours or someone who, like, was, you know, or maybe just someone on the street told you to listen to this. I don't know, but thank you for joining us. And if you want to go back to the beginning and, like, hear our neurotic journey to this moment, you totally can. And today we're just talking to some really fabulous guests, Mae Wilkerson and Alyssa Lim Paris. They're two comedians, actors, like brilliantly funny internet personalities, and they co-host a podcast called Crazy Semicolon in Bed. It's a UCB comedy podcast, and it's really good, and they talk a lot about mental health and in all of the ways it impacts your life, but they're also, like, really fucking funny. So we had this great chat. It's going to come up soon. So if you're new, you can keep listening without, like, spoiling anything. And if you're coming back and you're a regular listener, thank you so much. We love you.
We love you so much. We're so happy to have you. We're so happy to hear from you. We love the emails we've been getting, the messages we've been getting, the posts in our secret Facebook group. So now is the time we tell you to join the secret Facebook group and email us your worst first dates at 51firstdatespod@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at 51firstdatespod and message us and talk to us. We love hearing from you guys so much.
We do. And we really want you to also rate, subscribe, review. You know, I've just fully committed to saying them in that order. I think you say, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever. But, and I am trying to think of what we said last week. We said, like, oh, your favorite opening line. Or you can say, like, send us the grossest thing someone's ever said to you on a dating app. Like, put it in the review. You know, like, give us some stars and then put that in. And we'll read the good ones on the podcast.
Yes.
The good, and gross, terrible ones. Or yeah. So totally. Your best opening line or, like, the, like, weirdest line or grossest line you've gotten from someone on those dating apps. Totally. And then we'll read them on the pod. Because we don't care what you write. I mean, it's really actually – makes my entire day when we get lovey-dovey messages. Thank you to listeners who are like, Kimmy peer pressured me enough and now I did it. We really, really appreciate all of the love. It helps us grow, working on new things. Yeah.
It helps us get guests like the ones you're about to hear from, which makes me really happy because I really loved our conversation. We talked a lot about, like, you know, men and the hashtag patriarchy, but also, like, how we can make it all better together or try to, and also mental health and just stuff that's obviously really top of mind for everybody in the world right now. And we get cool guests like that. Like, when we invite people on our podcast, the first thing they do to see if we're, like, serious is go to iTunes and see how many reviews we have. Like, it makes a really, really big difference. So that's why we keep asking, because we want to keep making, like, content that you guys really like, that's really cool, with, like, really cool people and authors and smart, funny, great, wonderful, beautiful weirdos.
Yeah, and Mae and Alyssa are deeply funny. Like, they just, like, made me, you know, want to leave my boring life and become funnier just, like, talking with them.
Fully.
Just, like, really funny. You're going to love this conversation. You're going to love them, want to follow them, want to listen to their podcast. So we are going to be back next week with Kenny, the second dater, about his date number 3. Oof. And we'll take more emails. So keep sending in your worst first dates. We'll do more like reading emails next week. But this is just a really great conversation. If you ever struggled with mental health stuff, which I think a lot of us have, and kind of how to deal with that in dating, we talk about that. And I think it's helpful. It's comforting to me.
Totally. And yeah, we love you. And if you ever, I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, I think if you ever like need help, help too. This is just for a conversation about things. But like things are serious in the world of mental illness and mental health, and you should take care of yourselves in all the ways.
Yeah. And
therapy.
Even if you're not struggling with serious mental health things, I think that you should go to therapy because it changed my whole life and I won't ever stop talking about it.
Yeah. I've been so stressed out lately. I deeply need to go back to therapy.
I am getting on better insurance in exactly like 21 days. And I am the first day on my new insurance going back to therapy. Like, I cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. It's real. I miss it. Oh, wow. Well, I sound quite bummed out.
No, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're bummed or happy or whatever. It's just like, it's the best.
Feelings are feelings. Everything is fine. The sun is shining outside my window. It is. So, you know, welcome to this conversation.
That's a very, like, California point of view. Like, everything's fine. Like, the sun's out.
Yeah, like, sun's out. No earthquakes. this was fun because even though Alyssa and May are in L.A., as am I, Liza's in New York, we did it. We had to record just, like, based on schedules. Mostly my schedule's a big butthole these days. Big butthole. And there's nothing wrong with big buttholes, but when your schedule resembles one, it sucks. So, this is going to be a recording, but we think you'll love it. I've said that 10 times now. Shall we just like hit
do
play
it.
On the thing?
Let's do it. We love you guys so much.
We love you
and
so motherfucking much.
And here is our interview with May and Alyssa.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining us. We have May Wilkerson and Alyssa Lynn Paris here.
Woo-hoo. Hi, guys. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have them. They are comedians and co-hosts of the podcast Crazy in Bed, which is a UCB podcast. And they're just like two cool ladies who are hanging out with their beautiful dog right now.
I would like to say it's May's dog, but I...
You'd like to say it's our dog.
I'd like to say it's our dog. It makes me feel very good to hear that.
Alyssa's like, it takes a village to raise a small dog.
Yes.
So. Yeah. You're like a stepmom.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. An auntie.
You're the cool aunt.
She's definitely the cool aunt.
That's the best thing to be anyway.
The idea that I'm slowly going to try to steal the dog.
It's kind of more fun, creates a little competition in our friendship.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah. Tune into our podcast to hear us fight over my dog.
I mean, obviously, I always think dogs are the most important thing to talk about because I'm, you know, a sad 30-year-old dog lady.
About that. It's so fun. Like, once you have a dog, you don't have to worry about yourself anymore. It's just like, let's just talk about this dog.
Totally.
It's so easy. And the world is not a fun place right now. So to be able to talk about a dog, I feel like is a gift to everyone.
Yeah.
I hope.
Totally.
Because
to talk to a dog. Like, I work from home most of the time, and I talk to my dog literally all day in an uninterrupted stream. And it's objectively insane, but I do think it makes me feel better about, like, working from home.
Definitely.
Oh, my God. For sure. I do exactly the same thing. And I think she seems okay with it.
Yeah, she gets it.
Yeah, she gets it. She loves it.
So, as we said in our intro, we're going to talk a little bit today about, like, mental health and dating and all that fun stuff. But...
Yeah, everyone should go listen to Crazy in Bed, May and Alyssa's podcast with UCB, because it deals with all that stuff probably better than Liza and I could ever speak to. But yeah, it's really...
Yes, it's famously not a sex podcast. Even though it sounds like a sex podcast, it's much less fun than that.
Yeah, we like to disappoint people. Like, we get their hopes up with the premise, and then we're like, no, we're here to talk about our eating disorder.
Yes, we get a lot of creepy guys who are like,
crazy in bed. Ooh.
What? They're worried about their body.
I know, I've been in therapy since I was 19.
They're like fast-forwarding me up.
Yeah, waiting for the...
Where's the pictures?
Where's the nudity? Those are good. Our listeners.
Yeah, like get them in the door. They need to be hearing about this stuff. They're obviously not seeking it on their own. So I think it's good. You're so
right. We're doing them a favor.
That's true. Right. We must trick the people into caring about mental health.
We must.
We must.
Totally.
It's our duty.
It's the equivalent of like putting spinach in your brownies. You know how people do that?
I am always.
And
doing
also,
that.
I've never had a brownie without spinach in it.
Yeah.
Every treat of mine is like protein packed brownie with kale.
It's just spinach.
It's so bad, but it's in the shape of a square.
Oh my God.
That is true. I will buy anything that is like
in the shape of a square covered in plastic wrap.
Covered in tight plastic wrap.
Just tells you what it's a Rice Krispie treat.
Fine.
It's brown. You're like, okay.
Oh my God. And I ate a Dunkin' Donuts muffin on the train this morning. So, same. Well, it was really gross.
No. Don't worry. Believe me, we're Dunkin' fans. We're both from the East Coast. So,
yeah. I mean, I was in the New Haven train station. It's the Sbarro or Dunkin' Donuts, and I was starving.
I love that Dunkin'.
Slightly limited.
Yeah, the downstairs one.
We're all East Coast then. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm from outside of Boston, so also, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where are you guys from?
Where are you both from?
That is what this might explain why
this is
what
nice.
Brought us all here today. I'm from Lincoln, which is near Lexington Concord area.
And I'm from Seekonk, which is near like Rhode Island.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I'm from Holliston, so like near where the marathon starts. Like that's the best I can do. It's a tiny town.
Yes.
But, that's so funny because I'm from like far northeastern Connecticut and I'm like an hour and...
That counts.
20 minutes from you guys. Like, we all grew up in the same little pocket. That's very strange.
Get out. How dare you?
Sorry.
How dare you not? How dare you eat Dunkin' Donuts? You put that Dunkin' muffin down.
Just a huge muffin, a large iced coffee. I was feeling good.
No, Connecticut and Massachusetts are the same, I think.
Definitely.
We can all agree.
Yeah, we look
at the society. We're all the same.
Yeah.
Deep Dunkin' Donuts country.
Mm-hmm. I saw Dunkin' Donuts in LA. May and I just moved to LA recently, and I saw Dunkin' Donuts today, and I almost, it felt very nice.
Oh, it's so comforting.
Yeah, wait.
Terrible coffee.
Where are they?
A wonderful experience.
That's what I realized. Like, lots of chains and stuff, people knock them, but I'm like, I think there's something very comforting to knowing that no matter where you are in the world, if you go into a Dunkin' Donuts, it will taste the exact same. You know, or if you go into, like, a Subway, the smell will assault you.
Yes, and it looks the same. When I went to Mexico, and I would always go to McDonald's. I don't even like McDonald's, but I was in Mexico, and I was, like, I felt out of place, so it just made me feel comfortable.
Totally.
Yeah.
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 So I am the worst person in the world. I'm one of those horrible tourists that people hate that goes to a foreign country.
No, I've completely done that exact same thing because I'm just like, I just want to eat something that I know, like, especially when I've been gone for like longer periods of time. And you're like, everything is delicious in other countries, but I want the disgusting slop I grew up with.
Right. It's like mom's home. It's like home cooking, but bad.
It is.
But McDonald's the same idea.
It's like our mom. McDonald's raised us.
My mom like is Mickey D's.
My mom's just an arch.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
I would die for those legs. Come on.
She looks good. Yeah.
Right.
I need to find that Dunkin' Donuts because like, I haven't found like someplace that reminds me of home. And I didn't even go to Dunkin' Donuts that much at home, but like, I've got to go find it.
Yeah. Where was it?
I couldn't, I was on my way to Burbank. So it's like somewhere on the road.
It was a pop-up. It was a one-time thing.
I think it was a mirage. Like it was a mirage. I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's when she says she saw a Dunkin' Donuts,
I don't know. Water in 4 days, I'm not sure.
Yeah, she doesn't get a lot of protein, so don't listen to anything like that.
Oh,
of course you did.
Okay, so we usually like to kind of intro our guests to everyone by asking for a particularly bad first date story. Do you guys have any like worst firsts you want to share?
Oh my God, they're all so bad. I really can't even. When I've been on a lot of first dates, not to brag, but I think of them in my head. They all kind of blend into one, just like bad first date. With somebody, I feel like if you're not attracted to the person, like right off the bat, it's a bad date. So I would say, like, not to be depressing about online dating, but like 100% fail. So that's a lot of bad dates. But
because it's true, because online someone can look so hot, and then the minute you see them in person, you're like, fuck.
That's what it is.
Yeah, the energy is different than what you felt online.
Exactly. Like, you just know you either have like chemistry with somebody or you don't.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating that you have to go through the whole like date. I mean, I usually leave after 10 minutes, so I'm just saying it's a bad
time. Oh my God, do you?
No,
that's incredible. Okay.
I stick it out. I always stick it out for an hour. I give them an hour.
Yeah.
That's good. I was just about to ask you your 10 minute exit strategy.
Oh, God.
I was like, oh my God.
I have lied. I've taken a number of fake phone calls, but that's when I was younger. I don't do that anymore. Mostly because it's like, I realize people know. They can tell.
Yeah, they know. No one's also calling anymore. It's like so antiquated. Yeah. Hold on, a big call. It's like never a big, it's like you'd get a text. The idea of being like, uh-oh, I gotta take this.
And I don't know how to talk on the phone, so it just comes very obvious. Hello? I wait too long in between. Like an hour later.
It's like 9 p.m. Who could it possibly be? You have to pick a death. And then you have to like be acting. It's very hard.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You're like on an audition and a date at once. Awesome.
Yes. Yes.
That's what it is.
But yeah, I mean, the phone call, yeah, doesn't work. But I also like, I hate those dates where you can kind of tell both of you are on the same page. Like, because obviously the premise of this podcast was me going on a ton of dates until I finally lucked out and met my boyfriend. And then we didn't have a premise for the podcast anymore.
Oh my God.
But
wait.
So I went on 32 dates like weekly.
He was number 32? Or was he number 32?
No, he was number 13. I like held off.
Yes,
like,
girl. Yes. No, that is good.
I was like, the podcast is important, and let's see if you can handle me going on first dates. It was, yeah, it was like probably me being like a fuck girl in a way, but like I was really, you knew going into
it. For the podcast, for all women, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was fun, but I remember all the dates like that weren't so fun and people I didn't want to be my boyfriend. Sometimes you like knew it right away that you both weren't feeling it, and I wish there was like a button you could push.
Yes.
Where you're both like tap out after 10 minutes.
Totally.
Because then it's like
such
an hour's great, but an hour's a long time. An hour can turn into like 2 hours pretty easily too if it just like is slow service. I don't know.
The next bus.
Now I have a question.
Remember the next bus?
Sorry, what?
Yes.
Do you guys remember the next bus, that show on MTV?
Good show. I loved that show.
Yeah. Like it's really brutal and really harsh, but I feel like
it's a band-aid.
There's something to that premise where it's just like, you got a next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
God, that was so savage. Some people would just walk off the bus and they just immediately be like, next.
That was awful. That was horrible.
I mean, I bet a lot of those people are scarred. Like, just
totally.
I would never recover.
And everyone on that show ever was hot.
No, right.
Like, they were next and they were just like, she has a tattoo. I don't like tattoos.
Yeah, it's like, how dare you? You haven't been on a date in 7 years. Yeah. Now, I have a question. I've heard this happening. I have a boyfriend. I've had a boyfriend for about 4 years, so it's been a while for me. I hear people are, like, sending Venmo requests after bad dates. Is that a thing? Like, if a guy will pay and then the woman won't want to keep going out with him, he'll, like, Venmo request her. Has that ever happened? Do you guys?
Apparently it has, but not to me. God.
My jaw is on the floor. That's really bad.
Isn't that awful? A girl posted about it. She, like, posted the screenshot where the guy, isn't that hell?
Well,
did she pay it or did she decline it?
Okay. She paid it and she gave five extra and she was like, here, like, you clearly need it or something.
Okay.
Okay.
I hate playing devil's advocate.
I'd love to hear it.
But it's okay if I say I hate doing it.
Trump isn't that way.
Wait. You got immigration is really ruining America.
May.
I'm with her. Really.
Oh, no, we're with her. Feel free to share all your opinions. We've already gotten
haters.
Okay, cool. Where I could tell right away, you said you were a dog person, and I was like, if they love dogs, they can't love Trump. Right?
Like, we're from the Northeast.
How could you? Yeah.
You know.
That's also usually a selling point. And you live in New York. It's all, you have a podcast, all of these things.
Yeah, and especially, like, I feel like on this podcast, we often talk about, like, the different ways in which men suck, and it's hard not to talk about.
Yeah, he's like the token child.
He's their leader.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, I feel like we also try to talk a lot about the way that like men are getting, I think, so much better. Like there's so much growth in like so many men, and like we're doing such a better job like teaching men and raising men and being and like just like telling men to see us as humans, which also then plays into politics. Like we talk about it a lot.
No, it's true.
That's true. And that's a good way. That it is good to look at that side of it.
Yeah,
only because, like, my life is filled with really, like, wonderful men. You know, it's like, there's a lot of really shitty ones, too. But it's like, I feel like it's...
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that out now, though, too, because you don't want to, like, derail the convo. But it's
oh,
like,
totally.
You know, but it's like, you're right. And a lot of men are also atoning for themselves, which is something that is appreciated. Because we're going to have to figure out how to have a conversation about... like rape and assault from that includes people who have assaulted. Like, we can't just be like every guy who's ever assaulted a woman needs to shut up and never speak again. Like, we need to figure out some healing
rehabilitation process for
exactly
totally for all of them. And even just teaching and instructing men who like might not be at that level where they've committed like physical or sexual violence against a woman but might just like do smaller like have smaller aggressive tendencies, like, you know, not listening to women or like doing the like, well, actually thing, like the constant kind of like slight corrections or like dismissive, like those things like that, that can be really internalized.
Yes,
like are fixable. Like, I've seen men in my life make progress on them when I try to have meaningful conversations with them about
it. I think
it.
You're right that like we all feel lifted on the backs of strong women. So like we don't feel crazy for asking for more now because it's like, no, I don't feel like I do deserve this. And I'm going to say that I want this or need this because like so many women are speaking out and being so brave. It doesn't feel out of line, whereas like maybe 5 years ago, I would have just been like, well, I guess this is just what it is.
Totally. Or like, you know, I feel like I've been, even in the last couple of years, so much more emboldened to say like in a conversation that I'm like having, you know, disagreements with a man about like feminism or like women's roles in the world or whatever, I can say like, well, it's difficult to have this conversation because I don't necessarily feel like you're actually listening or like wanting to here internalized, you know, and like shit like that that I never would have said. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't.
Totally.
You know, or like when someone interrupts me being like, oh, like, well, you interrupted me so I didn't get to make my point. I'm always drunk when I'm having these conversations, and I'm definitely more bold.
It's also
kind
of exciting to just get older, isn't it? Maybe, like, I don't know how much of it is just getting older too and being like, no, like, I'm not... Yeah,
it's true.
When you're young, you're kind of like, oh, whatever it takes to make the boy like me. And now I'm older, I'm like,
totally.
Fuck you. Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, and just like as you get older, I think you're so much like more, I don't know, things that I just used to question my own point of view all the time. And I still try to, but I definitely am getting more kind of like more firmly, like confidently talking about the things that I really feel to be true, you know?
Yeah, totally.
With less shame. And like, I just used to feel a lot of shame about having opinions or being like a strong woman because I felt like that was not attractive to men.
Yes.
It's not attractive to a lot of men, but those are not
turns
men.
Turns out,
I was right.
But I have my friend Tilly.
But I have a dog. And dogs can't escape, so.
She literally looks held hostage right now.
Very happy, as you can see from her expression.
It's true. We just had a guest on who... We just had a guest on who wrote a book called The Love Gap. Her name's Jenna Birch, and her book is about how most like modern men who are like of our generation, like on paper, will say they want a woman who's like strong, independent, like has a great career, is really well educated. But a lot of those women are the women who have the hardest time finding like really committed partners, if that's what they're looking for. And so she wrote this book called The Love Gap about that very problem. And it's like super interesting. And I'm just shouting it out again.
Great.
Yeah.
Because I really think that that's true, because it's like, yes, especially as we get older, and it puts a burden on us too, because it's like, I feel this in a big way. Because it's like, if we want to be strong women with careers, and our man is also someone who wants to be a strong man with a career, like, there's stress there, because it's like, well, who's going to be like, I know my boyfriend and I are both like, yeah, we both do comedy and we both work really hard. And so it's not like one of us is ever. Yeah. It's hard. I get it. Yeah. Cause there's not a.
And you don't have a model necessarily to go on
right.
as much, because like a lot of us grew up with parents who set a certain precedent
totally.
About how things work, and the mom, you know, someone needs to be in the house all day to do this stuff, and someone needs to make the money. So like if a lot of people see that as the model and don't know
right,
how to
exactly.
make something else work.
Totally. And then even like I grew up with like a super career oriented mom, and so did my boyfriend, But even in those situations where we like, we did have those models of like super strong, really like successful, passionate, intense women raising us, we still have moments like that where I'm like, I ain't sacrificing shit. And he's like, no, like we just both need to be sacrificing at the same level.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, but it's like, yeah, that's exactly.
But even then, I'm still like, I'm not changing anything ever.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm carrying a baby in my body, you're doing everything else. Like, yeah. Yeah.
But it's tough because like we're having to renegotiate a lot of these like power imbalances, which means men are going to have to feel a loss in every area of their lives. And a lot of, and this is why it's always, we always say white men when we generalize about men, it's because this is a different experience for a lot of white men in America of not, of having to sacrifice things and having to like give up. And that's why we're seeing such a strong backlash online, especially from white men specifically against women getting more power.
And more opportunities.
And more opportunities. Yeah, because not that there's no sexism in non-white communities, but this is like a very specific, it seems, backlash that comes from men who are like, I don't want to lose the power that I have.
Right, whereas totally. We're always used to like negotiating the power and being like, okay, well, we have to like balance.
Share, and we're used to making sacrifices because we're used to sacrificing everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think men are really used to seeing us at, men, white men especially, are really used to seeing women as like caregivers and care providers because, and supporters of them.
We have been like historically.
Yeah. And like for basically every man, the warmest, most nurturing, for every person, usually not all the time, but usually like that first, like that main, like warm, nurturing person who makes you feel like so comforted and safe, whenever, is your mother. And then I think men have a tendency to not want to relinquish the view of like women as the kind of custodians of their well-being.
Yes.
And then it extends to their partners or like other women in their life, women who they work with, who, you know, whatever. And then we carry this like emotional burden of like having to take care of ourselves and of them.
Yes. Yeah. It's tiring. Yeah. It's a lot.
While killing it in our career.
This is some drunk feminism, even though I'm totally sober right now. Usually, like, we get into these convos with guests when we tend to drink Tito's and sodas a lot when we do our podcast. But we've done it less since we're in different time zones and it's, like, afternoon there and it's evening here.
Oh, yeah.
But we have an ongoing segment. That's a joke. We have no segments on this podcast. We just talk. But it's, like, a segment, air quotes, called Drunk Feminism. Which usually when I get drunk, I start talking about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I'd like everyone to know I'm sober.
Well, good. We've made you drunk with our words.
And our hate.
Yes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yeah, but...
Well, I mean, to segue terribly, this is all enough to, like, really make you feel pretty terrible in lots of different ways.
I know,
mean,
I'm fired up. News, go register to vote.
Yeah.
I just mean, even mentally and in terms of our health, I'm really trying here, guys. But, I mean, shit's tough. The world is really tough. How did you both kind of, like, start or come up with Crazy and Better, just, like... How much were you talking about mental health in your own comedy before? Did that happen first and then the podcast? Like, how was that? And was it scary? Because it seems scary. Even talking about dating is scary for me on the air.
Oh, my gosh. Well, where to begin? Well,
I think it began with our friendship.
Yes.
Alyssa and I met doing stand-up comedy. So I think... Are you guys comics? Do you do stand-up comedy? Okay, so it's like...
I'm not.
Oh, you are. Okay, but yeah. So you know, it's like you're kind of used to putting a lot of your personal stuff out there. So I think that's maybe partially where that comfort came from. But it was also something about Alyssa and I connected in a way where we realized that we struggled with a lot of the same demons. And we were able to be open with each other in a way that felt almost like somewhere in between a friendship and the support group.
Totally. Yes, that's a great way to put it. And it was just immediate. And we just felt very like... immediately connected and like very on the same page. And I don't remember not, like, I remember not being friends, and then I remember being, like, best friends. And I don't really remember much time in between that. And so, yeah, we bonded through probably our similar point of view and demons. Like, you know, we both struggled with eating issues, and then I struggled with depression and anxiety.
And you were coping with the loss of your dad.
Yeah.
So that's also a really heavy thing that I think kind of forced you to every conversation and connection you were making at that
and
point
I
in your
mean
life.
Every. And I mean every.
Barista.
Oh, and I mean every.
Strangers on the street.
Yes, yes.
You were like...
Was filtered through the lens of like grief and pain. And
grief can, I think, make you more open because in a way, and you've said this before, like grief makes everybody depressed.
Yeah.
And like, anxious in a way.
It is. It's like a... It's a...
Great equalizer.
It's a great equalizer. It's kind of a mental health like trial kit. It's like you... Because it kind of just gives it to you. It's like a JV... Yeah, because you... it's situational, so there's more reason behind it, which sometimes with depression, it's so heavy because it feels like it's not coming from anywhere, so then you can't, like, solve it, whereas with grief, it is so pointed to the actual event, but it feels very similar. So, yeah, I think through that, but May and I were really able to, like, joke and laugh. May was able to, like, make me laugh and joke about it a lot, and so we would have long conversations of, like, joking and darkness, and we were like, we should just start doing a podcast about it.
Yeah.
And so then Sophie Yalkeesian is like the most amazing producer in the world, and she wanted to do it with us. And so she started producing it. And
then she started working at UCB, and that was
what
happened. But yeah.
Well, I just appreciate it because, you know, Alyssa, I've never seen your live show about your dad, but I lost my mom to cancer in 2017. And like, it's just really comforting to see people talking about grief because it's such a weird thing. And like, just all anytime and all mental health. I think it kind of covers the board. Like, it's just like also stigmatized, even something like grief, where it's like, of course, people know you're upset if you lose a parent, but like, I don't know. You can still feel like literally crazy at times. And I don't know. So I just really appreciate that. And I think like, it's just like putting it all out there is just so helpful. And like, I try to get better at that. We talked about it early on in the podcast more, but like, yeah, I just appreciate that you both are putting it out there. And I just, like, want to remind all of our listeners, too, to, like, yeah, like, it's not – no one's alone in anything they're facing. You're not the only person.
Totally. I'm so sorry about your loss. And I think it is a big – like, yeah, it's – people know you're sad, but the fog and the cloud of mental illness and grief is so heavy, and it permeates through every single thing. And I think that's maybe something that people don't as much understand. So – I think it was scary for us to talk about it at first. I do remember us being really scared when initially everyone knew.
Yeah, it's weird. I've like put my mental health issues out on the internet like slowly over time, gradually. Like I wrote an essay. When I got sober, I quit drinking, and then I wrote an essay about being an alcoholic, and it was in the Huffington Post. And so like all these people that hadn't heard of me like since middle school or whatever were like, wow, I read your essay about how you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So it was like, and it was great. And I was actually really proud of the essay. And so, and like, it brought a lot of good things into my life. So I was just like, I guess being open about mental illness is something that pays off in a positive way. And it also has helped. Now everybody comes to me when they have alcohol problems, which is kind of nice. I really like that. It actually is like very refreshing because I know it's a really scary thing to be honest about. And I think grief is probably like that too. When you're so open about your grief, Alyssa, I think people feel like they can talk to you, or you inspire other people to have the courage to talk with.
Totally. And then I think the another piece of it that I'm like forgetting because it's been a while ago, but I do remember like when I first wrote about like having the eating disorder or even talking about grief, like you really relinquish a lot of the power of the eating disorder or the pain or the depression. Mm-hmm. Like there's something really like sickeningly magical about like an eating disorder is a very kind of secretive thing.
You hold yourself accountable. Like,
yeah.
I can't just start drinking again now because I'm like the drunk girl from the Huffington Post.
Right.
Like, no, nobody read that article, but you know what I mean. Like,
oh, wait, there's people on the street. Get out of here.
No.
Is that the drunk girl from
the alcoholic
We are totally scared. Scared for their riffs. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's what I'm going to put in the show notes of this episode, if you're cool with that.
What did you say?
No, I'm just kidding.
Kelly's in the show notes.
Yeah, I would like her to be in.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to make a. She needs an Instagram account.
She does. We're going to get one for her.
But yeah.
I think there's so much to that. Like the feeling that, you know, the things inside your head do hold a certain level of power that is at least shifted substantially when they're moved to outside of your head.
Yes.
And like, obviously we talk about therapy a lot on this podcast, and Kimmy and I have both had a lot of like, you know, years of being very into therapy and different ups and downs with like, you know, things that range in levels of seriousness. But I know that like the realization for me that going to therapy and externalizing things that I was like holding on to because they felt so like dark or shameful or whatever, that like airing them didn't make them worse. It made them, if not better right away, then at least different. Like their importance immediately changed.
I remember when I discovered journaling, and that was like the first step to like feeling that sense of like, at least if I can at least get these thoughts like out of my head, or at least get them also somewhere else, it'll free me for, I remember if I could journal for like 2 hours, it would free me for a couple days, and then it was just like a dump, and then eventually that,
oh my
became,
god,
right?
Yeah Geminis love journaling. Sorry, I had to butt in to say, I don't remember if this was before we started recording, but Alyssa and I are both Geminis, and Geminis love to fucking journal.
We love to journal because we have too many thoughts, and
we have to organize them, we have to like get a hold of them.
Exactly. Yeah, and then that just became therapy, and then that became like talking about it out loud. But yeah,
totally.
This is so cute. I can't handle this dog. Well, the dog's helped your anxiety, would you say?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Emotional support animals are, that is a real thing that a lot of people take advantage of, P.S. But that is a real thing.
Yeah. Just having...
Yeah, it's really wild how much harder it is to like... Like the soothing quality of just holding a small living creature.
It's unbelievable. It's so real. I mean, it really does. Like it's like it soothes me in a very deep way that I always was totally. Like, oh man, I guess I gotta have kids because like I will only be happy. Like, but it's like then you hold your dog and you're like, oh no, I just needed like a warm
living thing. Yeah, it's
fully.
Yeah.
I just spent a week with my sister, who just had a baby, like the baby's 2 weeks old. And I just got home, like that was where I was coming from on the train. I just got home today. And I literally, like I had this moment when I was journaling at home, full circle, that like I was writing and I was like, this is the calmest and happiest I've felt in like actual years. And it is because I love my sister and I love my niece and all of that. But I'm not like a baby person. I'm not dying to have kids. It's not like ever been something in my head, and that like being around them didn't necessarily change that, but it's like there's just something so visceral about it, about like a really like innocent, simple creature who feels no anxiety and just wants to like be close to you.
Yes.
And you're taking care of it. There's something so nice that you're like taking care of it.
Yeah, it's very pure.
Not only do I feel comforted, but I feel like I have a purpose on this earth, which is to like care for this creature that I love. And as somebody who like struggles with mental health, it's hard for me to take care of myself. Like self-care is such an issue for me.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Or self-care,
it's complicated. I'm too cheap to spend money on myself. I can't buy organic, you know, I'm like, but then with a dog or with, you know, it's like, I suddenly realize how important it is to like care for the dog. So the dog eats
totally
better than I do.
Totally. And like, I do not talk about this a lot, and I have probably alluded to having some issues with depression in my past on this podcast, but I haven't talked about it really extensively. But like, I had one period of depression where it was like 3 months, and I kind of like basically was in bed for 3 months. Like it was really like bad and hard and like caused by nothing. Like, which is very
like
confusing.
Sounds
like yeah, like it's just, you're like, oh, okay, cool. And having a dog during that period was like I was literally like, I have to get out of bed 3 times a day.
Yes.
And it's like, it was really simple, but it really was powerful. And it was someone it's a dog, but just like her depending on me.
It's better than it's a dog.
And, you know, like that can mean a lot, like in combination with therapy and medication, if it's right for you.
Full lobotomy, new life. Yeah.
Just have someone smack you like an old VCR a couple times.
No, but I think that's huge. I think for depression, small is like the key to getting out of depression. I think little tiny things. And so like having just knowing, okay, 3 times a day, I have to take this dog out. That's something. And then you build on top of that. Mm-hmm. I was really, one of my times where I was really depressed, I moved into a place with 2 dogs. And I remember that same feeling of like, there's more living creatures in here. It takes me out of myself a little bit. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Or like, for those of us who don't have dogs that are sad about it, or like in my times of darkness, like it's even just like getting yourself into the shower sometimes, like just the littlest thing sometimes, or like having that roommate, like, cause it's just so easy to to stay within the spiral.
Totally.
And reaching out to another person, I feel, is huge. Even if you're just texting a friend.
Yeah.
Like, if that's another thing I think why our friendship is so important for my mental health is that, like, I sometimes just need to externalize my feelings to somebody that is going to be non-judgmental and just understand and empathize and not freak out about it.
Totally.
And if I'm in a really dark place, I can just, like, externalize that or say it to. Or if I'm, like, you know, I'm in recovery from an eating disorder, so if I'm, like, feeling triggered or something, I can just tell Alyssa.
And even if you, just telling each other, there's a light at the end of the tunnel in a way. It's like, you know, holding it, it frees you. It's like, even if I'm in this state for a couple days longer, we're in this, I'm dragging you down.
Like, I'm in the water, you're in the canoe, so join me in the water.
Totally. But it's so powerful to have friends too, who I think are like,
you're coming neither way.
Oh my God, I love it. I think it's so powerful to have friends too who understand that, like, they don't need to try to fix everything.
Yes.
Like, obviously there are moments when you want fixers, you know. I definitely have friends I call when I'm like, I need someone to come and just clean some shit up for me, figuratively or sometimes literally. Yeah. And I have friends who I call.
We will take those numbers.
Literally. I have a friend who every time I need to clean out my closet, I'm like, come over and be mean to me, that I have to throw things away. But I think it's really powerful to have friends who like kind of intuitively understand what you're going through and understand that like you're not necessarily looking for a fix. You're not looking for like prescriptive advice. You just like need an ear. You need empathy. You need like recognition that what you're feeling is really powerful and like it's not and that other people feel it or whatever, you're looking for by sharing.
Like a lot of times like parents are the people you're used to going to, but parents are almost always like, I feel fixers because they get scared and they're just like, oh no, they're depressed. I need to go fix this or I need to go. And you don't really want that. So it's like helpful to have friends who are just going to be able to be like, you're not crazy. You're feeling this. It's totally valid. It sucks. It will pass. Hang in there. Let me know if I need anything. Kind of thing.
Yep. Totally.
I feel like take the stigma away. Like, especially with eating disorders, it's wild. I feel like I know so many more female friends than like admit to having eating disorders like openly. I don't know. I feel like there's still a huge stigma around that.
Yeah.
Totally. I've dealt with some bulimia. Liza, I remember when you and I first talked about this, we can cut this out. I want to blow our stuff out there. Like it was really nice because it just felt so separate than other friend groups to be like, oh, okay. Like I can talk to you about this because there's no stigma because we both felt it.
Yes.
Whereas like with a fix, I don't know. It's just really tricky. So I just like, again, back to like the keep talking, keep being open about this stuff. It's like so comforting. Even just having you both on, I'm like, okay, I can share some things, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I should be doing anyway because we have a podcast, so I should be always vulnerable.
No, it's hard.
I'm not.
It's really hard. And we need to forgive ourselves too when like we need to be forgiving of ourselves when we don't talk about stuff. Because like there's things that I don't talk about too. You know, there's like things that.
Me too.
Some things that are hard.
Totally. Yeah,
still
and there's also a time and a place and like the right people for that and the right. Sometimes it's like I literally feel like usually my journal is like my first step, you know. Sure. Sometimes it's like baby steps.
Yeah, journaling is it's like a good way to get that first feeling out.
And then you can decide whether to take it. Yeah.
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 So it's funny to like force this in the direction of dating. I remember when we started the podcast like a year ago, I was having this weird thing where I just wanted to tell everyone about my mom, not like in a dramatic way, but like when people ask about family, there were just so many weird wordings that I wasn't used to. And I kind of had a couple dates that I went on where it like came up on a first date, which I know is a lot. And I would like feel really anxious about it. Again, that's probably some like male people-pleasing stuff. But I don't know. I think there's like, of course, you don't have to like bring these things up on a first date. Probably shouldn't. But it's just really hard when these things are, no matter what type of like mental health issue or substance abuse issue or whatever you're facing, like it inevitably impacts dating. I don't know if Marilissa, either of you can like speak to that, even if not from your own experience, just.
Oh no, totally. Yeah.
I definitely have, feel like I am in a position of going out on dates with guys who like want to know right away why I don't drink. So that's always kind of putting my shit out there right away. And I'm super open about like being an alcoholic and talk about like drinking all the time in comedy, and online, but there's something about a first date where it's like, I don't know, man, do I need you to know that I used to like, you know, like wake up in my own puke? Like why, yeah. Why does that have to be our, so sometimes I will kind of hold back on like mental health stuff on a first date just because it's scary in that context.
And you don't necessarily want it to like feel like it's like defining you or whatever. And so if, yes.
Yeah. So I'll just be like, I'm not drinking tonight or something. I'll like change the subject and.
Totally. Because I think that this has come up with a lot of people on we've talked to about different first dates or whatever, that they're, if there's something that tends to like be outlying about you that gets noticed early, like I'll bring up an example that is not of the same scale or importance, but like I have a nut allergy and I always have to mention it to everyone. And then I know that on every date I ever went on, there was going to be at least a 15-minute conversation about allergies and EpiPens and how have I used them and how many times and what happens when I have allergies. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about this. It's not sexy. It's like not, I don't want to talk about it every time. And I think obviously, again, this is a much more personal, bigger and like more like, you know, yeah, vulnerable conversation to have. But it's, I imagine it's the same thing where you're like, I don't want this to be a part of every goddamn date.
Like I know how this goes. I know what the next questions are. Yeah, I don't want, but then I will say the flip side of it is like, I don't think I was in any real relationships until I actually started being honest with like both myself and my partner about like, because for so long I'd be like, I'm not hungry, or I just ate, or I like, oh, the secretiveness of food was like really, I don't know, because it, so once I started just being open about it, I feel like that's when I really started having real relationships.
Yeah. I think it does help.
It's interesting. Eating disorders are also complicated with dates. Yeah.
Yeah.
And May, just to go back for any, and even, well, I guess I'm not going on dates anymore, but like, would you have rather like a date not ask you why you weren't drinking? Like what would be the ideal way for like a listener who's on a date who does drink maybe and then
like their date
or was it
drink.
Fine?
I feel like most dates should not, I feel like people shouldn't rely so heavily on alcohol on dates. It's like that just as something in general, it's like, okay, you want to sit in a bar? Like there's so many other activities we could do. Just take a walk. I think people should just walk on dates.
Oh, me too.
This is my own thing.
I love that.
It's way more comfortable. It's like bars, even when I drink alcohol.
This is our eating disorder. Yes. Yes, I love that. Why aren't we walking right now?
Let's always be walking. We should always
be walking. Yes.
I like to have my dates meet me at the gym.
Well, yes. I also feel like when you start walking, like if I sit down on a date, I'm going to be thinking about how I'm sitting and like what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. Like bars are uncomfortable for everyone. And that's why people drink at them, because you're just sitting there across from each other with nothing else going on but alcohol. So of course
it's like an interview.
It's an interview, but also it's like a whole culture of like, well, we need to be drunk so that we can have sex, so that we can feel comfortable being ourselves. And like, I know that's a thing. And that's fine. And you can't ask, I can't ask all of society to suddenly be like, oh, we're sober too, you know? Like,
yeah, especially now. The world's too dark.
Drink away. I encourage my partners to drink as much as possible on their dates with me, actually. I'm like,
believe me, you're
going to
need
this.
It, buddy. Yeah. No, you drink, I'll tell you why I don't. Order a double.
Yeah, no, it's true, they do. Anyway. No, I don't care if people drink around me. I think a good thing to do is just, like, if you want to drink, drink. Do whatever makes you comfortable and, like, maybe don't obsess over like what the other person is putting in their body, but more ask them other, there's so many other things you can ask about a person.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can you imagine a first date? You're just like, so which parent felt connected with you more emotionally? Like you'd fall in love right away.
Yeah. That's a hot tip.
That's a hot tip. Guys, men.
What about like in more broad terms when you're dating, bringing up mental health issues? Because obviously when you're having stuff's going on with your mental health, it's really top of mind. It kind of takes over like so many aspects of your life. But it can also be like tricky to like open that up to someone who you're newly seeing. Do you guys have like feels or thoughts on like when and where and how it might be like comfortable or the right time to talk to someone you're dating about that stuff?
I guess my short answer is I think sometimes it's whatever feels right for you and whatever you're looking for or ready for. And for me, it's just been the more comfortable I've become with my mental health, the more I've talked about it. Like, I don't think I could have talked about it the way I talk about it now in relationships 5 years ago, whereas now I'm more comfortable with it. So it is, I'm more naturally going to talk about it. But also I've been with my boyfriend for, you know, 3.5 or 4 years. And so at this point, it's kind of, we each tell each other everything. So it's pretty all out there on the table. And I think it probably, with him, honestly, has been from the beginning, and that's probably strengthened or made it, you know, why we've been able to be together for so long.
For me, I would say, I guess it, just the same thing as what Alyssa said, that like, I'm lucky, I'm fortunate to be so comfortable talking about it, so I think it really just, it's like whenever you're comfortable, but it does has come up pretty early in all of my relationships because it does. It's like a big part of my life. And I do think that it helps me be more myself, more honest with who I am in a relationship. And then I'm just more comfortable and they're more comfortable. So I think it does help strengthen relationships.
Just if you don't feel comfortable talking about it with your partner, then I think, don't feel bad about it. That's okay. It just means you're not ready yet. And maybe it is time to journal or like start seeing a therapist or hang out with a friend. Like, I definitely think our friendship has helped greatly, like even in our romantic relationships, because then we've gotten so comfortable talking about it that we're more comfortable talking to someone else. So don't beat yourself up if you're not that open with your partner at first.
Yeah. You can practice telling your friends.
Yeah.
Totally. That's awesome. I love that. All right. Well, we should probably let you guys go.
Thank you so much for doing this and, you know, dealing with, you know, this like four-way call essentially.
No, thank you so much. And thank you for letting me jump in. And it was really fun.
Oh, yeah. We loved this. Thanks for having us. You guys are so great.
We want that.
Totally. And let our listeners know like where they can find you, your social meds, all that.
You can follow me, May Wilkerson, on Twitter at ShutUpMay, or on Instagram at May Wilkerson, or Facebook, May Wilkerson.
And you can follow me, Alyssa Limparis, at Alyssa Limp, AlyssaLimp, on Instagram and Twitter. And on that, you can see us give updates on our podcast, Crazy in Bed, and on our live show that we're going to be doing, Stand Up on Mental Health. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Oh my God, amazing. What's the next date of your live show?
We don't have it yet because we just moved to LA, so we're still kind of figuring out our new lay of the land.
So yeah,
we'll give you a couple weeks.
Yes, perfect.
Thanks. I want to come. If it's going to be in LA, then I want to come. I can like get a little crew to come. Yeah.
Oh, we would love that. We'd love to meet you in person.
That would be so fun.
Yeah, no, I will definitely come, and I'll bring friends if you'd like me to.
We would love you to.
We would love that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. This was so great. And yeah.
Thank you guys. You guys are so wonderful.
We sign off with our listeners by saying, telling them to go on a date. So, you know, go on a date if you're in the mood for it. Or if you want to stay home in bed, that's fine too.
Yes. Go on a phone date with your friends.
Yes. Go on a phone date. I love that.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Yay.
Okay. Talk soon. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
A big shout out to Anthony from 5 Ohm for making us sound really good in post.
And you should check 5OHM out online at 5OHM.com.
And that's spelled F-I-V-E-O-H-M.
OHM.